Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. I am your host, Mark Ellis, joined once again by my beloved co-host. She's back, I hope for good, but probably not. Jacqueline Coley, how you doing, babe? I haven't seen you in like years.
It's been a month.
It's felt like a long time.
I know,
I was running out of excuses to tell people, because usually if like one of us is out for a week, I'll be like, oh, we're on assignment, or like, you know, you just like make up some vague term, like working really hard. I'll be honest, by the end of this run, I was like, look, I think she's home playing video games, but she deserves it because she had a brutal award season. She went to every red carpet. She's flying all over the world. She deserves to sit home and play Fortnite if she wants to.
I mean, in truth, there was some video games played. It was Don't Starve, though, for anyone listening. If you want to find me, I have a server. No, I'm old, man. And so,
What happened.
Yeah, so I will be the first to say, ladies and gentlemen, take care of your feet. If you have a doctor that says, hey, I think you might have something wrong with your foot, maybe don't wear heels as much as you do this awards season. Try to get into some flats. And then you start thinking of all the looks that you can't serve ignore that advice. Just know that you might be laid up for a month.
Oh, my God. Is that what happened?
That was like the sequence of events. But as with so many things, as you get older, you think that this is what's wrong with the car. And then they tell you there's something else wrong with it. But well, I'm fine. I'm nothing wrong with it. Again, just getting old. Gotta stretch, guys. Stretch, take your vitamins.
It was a great segue you just had.
Yeah.
Because if we're taking care of the car.
Yeah!
We have a movie that I'm not gonna quite say it's a classic, but we do have a classic guest here to talk about it. And it's been way too long since I've seen you in person as well, sir. From the Outlaw Nation, the hub is YouTube. You can check out his channel, subscribe, and look at all the cool shows he's got going on. He is the one, the only, the outlaw himself. Mr. John Rocha, back on the show.
This is the first time in person.
I know.
So I'm very excited by this.
Yeah. I really do feel like, I do have to say, hearing Mark say your name, I do feel like you need a WWE style entrance. Like, I don't even feel like this is right.
Had plenty of those.
I know.
Those
I know he has, days. But that's what's like, what's weird about this. Like, I feel weird.
I mean, look, especially because the movie we're talking about here.
The history here.
John knows a little something about movie trivia.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking back on the Schmodown days, and I'm wondering, did you ever go through the filmography of this particular franchise we're about to talk about?
Absolutely. Action adventure is where you're at. Thrillers, yes, of course. Vin Diesel's filmography, but also the Fast and Furious movies, because I like these movies for a number of reasons, and I always go see them either opening night or at the screenings. I love this series from the first one until the last one, except for the second one. But yes, absolutely. And there's a lot of interesting directors on this, too.
We're talking about the OG here today, the Fast and the Furious from 2001. Rob Cohen directed, starring, obviously, Vin Diesel, Paul Walker, the whole gang. And look, it's a movie that you go back and you revisit now, knowing everything that we know and seeing all the movies that we've seen in this franchise since then, and you say, now we're blowing up stuff and we're international spies and we're going to outer space. Back here, it was just like a street racing movie.
Yeah.
There was a heist element to it, but we were just really kind of doing drag racing and living our lives a quarter mile at a time. And then all this other stuff sort of blossomed. So I want to give a couple editorial shout outs too. Right now on RottenTomatoes.com, you can check out all the Fast and Furious movies ranked via Tomato Meter. Mm. But also, our buddy Alex Vo did a great article where it's how to watch the Fast and Furious movies
I love this.
In order. And it's not as chronological as you might think, at least in terms of release date. So here's how to watch them in order. You go 1, 2, right? Mm-hmm. Easy enough. And then you skip to 4, right. Fast and Furious. And then you go to Fast 5. Then you go to Fast 6. Then you go back to Tokyo Drift, a movie that we already covered on an episode of this show. Yeah. Then you go to 7, 8, Hobbs and Shaw, and then 9. And obviously, one of the reasons why we're talking about this movie is that we have the big Fast 10 coming out in theaters on May 19th. So, John, Jacqueline, 54% rotten is the score for the Fast and the Furious. That's the OG. And then the movie stayed in pretty rough, like, rotten territory until we hit Fast 5. Mm. And then, with the exception of the most recent entry, Fast 9, everything else has been fresh. Fast 9 is clinging to 59%. So it's so close. But this one, 54%. I'll start with you, Mr. Rocha.
Yeah.
Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong?
Yes, 100% it's wrong. The OG is like 70 or 80%. It's ridiculous. Clearly, these critics at that time did not understand street culture and racing culture and the gift that is to enjoy this movie. And I think this is such an interesting time because 2001 is when things are changing. New different kinds of franchises are popping up. Remember, we're just now opening the door to superhero franchises in 2000, right, with X-Men and what have you. So we're just opening the door to the possibility here. And here comes a film that is a diverse cast, has a fantastic action director coming off Dragon, and then you bring in all these new actors who are going to be in our lives for multiple years afterwards. So clearly the casting was smart as well. And you take advantage of people loving that vibe that people have over Top Gun or Point Break, that kind of 80s action vibe coming back here in Fast and Furious, the original. And it's no surprise that when The Rock shows up, it goes fresh. And when The Rock leaves, it doesn't. So it's very interesting to consider that as well.
I am not giving that man that much power. His head is big enough.
Really? Physically and figuratively?
Literally.
Definitely physically, because after rewatching The Fast and the Furious, I watched Fast 5 last night, and I'm like, God, this guy's huge.
Yes,
and
his
head is even bigger with the beard somehow.
DJ's going to DJ, man. Listen.
Jacqueline, is Rotten Tomatoes wrong with that 54% rotten score?
I'm so glad that I'm back, because, this is one where I can't even understand how it's rotten in the sense of, like, I understand how it's rotten in the abstract, but I really, when you look at it against other comedic, really interesting main character sort of action films, it really rises above to anything else that we would call fresh. Like, I'm sorry, I don't know how you could love Die Hard and then think that this is crap, but I think it has to do with what John was saying about at that time, because really, look, This was Universal and, like, Landmark to have this kind of cast be an integrated cast. Because remember, we had already had movies like Belly. We had already had movies like New Jack City, where you had maybe more of, like, crime or even sort of, like, young people doing bad things movies. We already had all of those, but they were very segregated. Mm-hmm. It was very much like, you know, Harlem Nights over here or something like that. This was one where you not only made it younger, you made it a different type of crime. You have, like, espionage on, like, the internet. Like, this was still at a time when, like, that dude that's a part of the crew who was the hacker, he was the coolest guy in the room. This was back when you could make people think someone like Hugh Jackman was a hacker. Like, this was that Swordfish, time of the internet. Yeah. And so I feel it was a changing of the guard. This was still a time when old school reviewers like Roger Ebert and Richard Roper were still, like, on Daily Beats. But you also had this new brash brand of, like, the ain't it cool sort of, like, internet folks. And this was right at that intersection. I mean, this is 4 years after Rotten Tomatoes started. This was a movie that really sort of, I think, exemplified when that divide started happening between commercial audiences and what they wanted to see and what everyone agreed was a good movie.
Good point.
Yeah. And it's interesting you bring up the diversity that this movie has, because, you know, Jacqueline makes a good point. If you look at a movie that came out in the mid-90s, something like Dead Presidents, where it still felt like, oh, okay, that's this particular culture in this particular world in this particular city. But with The Fast and the Furious, it was so multicultural, and it wasn't necessarily about any one particular ethnicity. It was more about being young and finding something that is our outlet. How can we express ourselves that maybe is frowned upon by the law, but it also makes us feel like we have value, and it's how our family, and that you hear that F word a lot in this franchise, it's how our family comes together and breaks bread and a lot of delicious barbecue chicken. So I will, before I turn it over to 2 Minutes with Tim, I'm going to ask Jacqueline for the synopsis. And again, this is not the whole franchise. This is just this movie. I don't want you to worry about any other stuff that happens. Just the Fast and the Furious from 2001.
All right. So actually, all right, we're just going to go with this one because I forgot Paul Walker's character's name, but we're going to go it off the dome. Here
Brian.
We go.
Brian. Yeah.
Brian, thank you. I was like, what was his name? Sorry.
Well,
his
real name is Brian and his fake name is Brian. So it's easy for him to be undercover. It's just a different, I think it's Brian Earl Spilner is the fake name and then Brian O'Connor, is the real name.
I mean, and also Delroy, I don't need to know his name in this one, but we're going to go. So we start with our lead character, Paul Walker, who is your average Johnny Utah type stand-in, who is tasked to go undercover because, you know, he used to like to do street racing back in the day before he became a narc. And they want to send him undercover because they suspect that a group of street racers are involved in a high-stakes robbery ring. And they suspect that it is the Toretto family car shop motorcycle ring led by the very charismatic and incredible Vin Diesel.
And a nice restaurant.
And a nice restaurant, all of their fun little businesses.
Tuna. Tuna.
And his, you know, sister, who Paul Walker, of course, through the course of this movie, instantly has eyes on. Mm. Paul, of course, ingratiates himself by, you know, being bold and brash enough to think he can challenge Don to a race, losing his car and his dignity in the process. Through the course of the events of the film, we find out that, the Toretto's are robbing people. It is eventually discovered that Paul is an FBI agent, but it is only before the last big score, the one score that's going to take them out of the game, that they come together and he saves them in a way from the fate that they are destined to
from
be
the
in.
Fate of the Furious.
That's amazing.
I mean, he's trying to be, he's not even an FBI agent. He's working with the FBI. It's so funny because he's an undercover cop, but the cops are working with the feds on this.
Yes.
And so it's almost like the cops are auditioning for the FBI.
Yes.
Like, this is their big showcase night. If they're comedians, they're like, hey, guys, the FBI's in the crowd.
Yeah.
I'm going to do 10 minutes and see if they like me. And that 10 minutes happens to be trying to break up this ring before the truckers start fighting back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got the FBI signs on the seats for this, right on the front row for them, for sure.
And let's pretend for 1 second like that would actually be the way that it goes. But, you know, it's part heist, part family, all Vin Diesel.
Yes, all vroom, vroom. And so now, before we get into the movie talk segment, we are going to turn it over to our good buddy, Tim Ryan, our expert review curation manager here at Rotten Tomatoes. He's going to tell us what the critics were saying at the time of this film's release way back in June of 2001. Hit it, Tim. 2 minutes
with Tim. If anyone had told you back in 2001 that The Fast and the Furious would spawn 8 sequels plus a spinoff and an animated series and become a multi-billion dollar global phenomenon, you'd have thought they were crazy. Sure, it did well at the box office and the reviews were decent, but the idea of a loose Point Break remake being the kickoff for one of the most popular franchises in movie history would have sounded improbable. And the idea that it would eventually win the hearts of the critics would seem even more unlikely, especially after the first 4 movies were rotten. But here we are, 22 years later, and Fast 10 is right on the horizon. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's go back to the beginning. The Fast and the Furious is rotten at 54% on the tomato meter with 152 reviews, and it has a 74% audience score. And just as a reminder, we covered The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift on a previous episode. So what did the critics have to say? In a Rotten review, Bruce Kirkland of Jam Movies wrote that the film has the lasting power of a quarter-mile race. When it's over, all you're left with is fumes. However, in a fresh review, Margaret McGurk of the Cincinnati Inquirer wrote, "Melodramatic, preposterous, excessive, this movie is all that. Yet it is also magnetically appealing." So that's The Fast and the Furious. Let's get back to Jacqueline and Mark, 2 people who live their lives a quarter mile at a time.
Thank you, Tim, and you are family to us. Before we get into movie talk, just a quick, it's now 30 seconds with Mark, that the new special, My Stand-Up Hour, is coming out very soon. You can go to Mark Ellis Live for all the updates on that for the particular release and ways to watch it. So very excited about that. And let's get into movie talk. Hit the music, Brian. And so now we get into talking about this movie. And as Tim pointed out, you know, I can understand why the immediate sequels to this movie were frowned upon by critics, are rotten on the tomato meter, because if this just feels like somewhat of a fun but forgettable flick where it's just about street racing and we'll get over this, and it doesn't quite have the staying power of something like a Point Break or The Rock, other 90s action movies, I see why the sequels felt like a cheap imitation of that, because you didn't really have this, like, the cognitive ability back then to see where this franchise was going. Mm. And so to set the sort of foundation of this and have it be about street racing and that culture and then have it go to the heights where it's gone now, I think in retrospect, it's a lot easier to say, oh, the critics got this wrong. But at the time, I would say Rotten Tomatoes is wrong, but I think this movie probably lands somewhere in the 60% range.
No, you're insane. 70% is where it belongs, and you're an insane person to say that. I think Jackie nailed it on the head. We were going through a transition of critics as well. I think this sure. comes out in 2023. This is a much higher score, both audience-wise and critics-wise, fair. I think, as well. And I think that's the difference here. And when you look at the progression of the series, you're absolutely right. The sequels were a pale imitation of the first movie. And I'm not, I think even Vin saw that by not appearing in Tokyo Drift. I think he saw, I'm not going to hang myself or attach myself to this quickly sinking anchor. Let me get out of this. But when The Rock came, it revitalized everything. And I think that changed it. And it was going straight to DVD. I think in the probably the third or fourth film, you could sense the box office wasn't quite there. The interest wasn't quite there. So they were in trouble. The Rock coming in really saved it and add more energy to the franchise. But that being said, you had some really good directors. I mean, Singleton did the second one.
Yeah.
You have some good Justin Lin coming in. You have some good directors who were a part of this, who understood that there was something in this franchise that appealed to young people. And that idea of rebellion and that idea of coming out and having some fun and being dangerous and pushing the limits, these things never change and they're generational and universal.
And Jack, when you see with the audience score being 74% being fresh, I think more where you and John feel the movie belongs. But you also see it, another way that people like to speak is with their wallet. So this movie opened $40 million, already making its $38 million budget back. It'd go on to do over $200 million worldwide. But when the DVD came out, on its first day of DVD sales, 2 million copies.
Wow.
And so, like, you see those numbers, and you're like, maybe there was a generational disconnect between the reviewers of this movie and the audience it was intended for.
This was a movie where, as I like to say, there's certain movies that come out. In fact, there's one that's about to come out this summer that I am going to base my entire personality on, and that is Oppenheimer.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, for those of you not in the visual medium, I'm currently wearing a Barbie shirt.
So
the idea that I'm making that my personality is hilarious.
I can't
hilarious.
Wait to see the box office numbers that week. I mean, Barbie versus Oppenheimer.
A whole thing. But this was a movie that people wanted to make their personality about. I remember seeing this movie at, I want to believe that this was the summer in between my freshman and my freshman year of college and my senior year of high school. And the thing I thought was so crazy about that aspect of it was people in the parking lot acting like they were in their drag racing thing, to the point where people had to make notes about, like, hey, don't do this. Like, cops would hang out pretty much any night Fast and Furious was in theaters to make sure that people didn't do stupid stuff in the parking lot.
And I say good. I mean, in my last special, Dog Stepfather, I talked about how, like you should not be allowed to drive home after seeing one of these movies in the theater.
No, because
you can't handle it.
No.
Especially men. We're like, shifting as hard as we can, and I drive an automatic. Like, you should never have to shift anything this hard.
All y'all are acting like you're Rowdy and freaking Cole Trickle from Days of Thunder driving down the back roads of Cahuenga in Los Angeles. Like, you are not that hard. Anyway, but...
But I have the same feeling about this movie that I do something like Jaws, where Jaws is this heralded classic. But the fallout of Jaws, and one of the things that even Peter Benchley and Steven Spielberg have expressed some regret for, is it inspired a bunch of dopes to go out and try to hunt great white sharks who aren't bothering anybody. They're not Bruce from the movie. They're not eating kids. They're just swimming, living their lives. And so you go out and kill the same way, where it's like, I've had friends that have had their families tragically affected by illegal street racing.
Oh, wow.
And so you see, like, it's that art, entertainment, are video games making kids violent? It's that old argument.
Look, if you can say that women decided to do archery after Katniss Everdeen, you cannot deny that there are some people that were skid marks on a highway because of Fate and the Fury, or Fast and Furious. Like, you can't make that distinction. And let's be real, the thought process for a dude that says, I look cool riding down the street is even worse than some girl that's like, I want to be Katniss and bow like this, like I volunteer as tribute. This is just a totally different calculus. The only thing I was going to add to you where you were talking about with Fast and Furious is, it's so morphed, it's so changed. But with The Rock, it's so crazy to me that a man that is only improved by either ensemble or dual performances is so obsessed with being the only man standing. Because the only way that he works the best, look at some of his best work. When he worked with Kevin Hart, Kevin Hart humanizes him in a way that he cannot appreciate. It's like when Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger mm-hmm. do a movie together. You don't get why it works, but it just works. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like that dynamic. Him missing that is, in my opinion, is really awful.
But yeah. I also feel like that there is a point break, like kind of line.
Oh,
to draw.
Totally.
And I think Patrick Swayze could carry a movie by himself. Yeah. And there's proof of that. Keanu Reeves, we've seen since then, could. Right. I don't know that we had the litmus test back when Point Break came out.
Right.
And so what I would say about Paul Walker and Vin Diesel in this movie, the first one, is that I think that this movie helps them out by pairing them together.
Yes.
Because as you see in the immediate sequels, whether it's Too Fast, Too Furious or Fast and Furious, either one of them carrying the movie by themselves mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily work as well as having them play off one another in that dynamic.
Yeah, I've tried to watch shows with just Jackie or just Mark, and it doesn't work. As I'm saying, it has the same chemistry.
I mean, honestly, I'd be the first one to admit it. I am a prickly heifer, and the fact that he puts up with me is the testament to his niceness.
And I can say, when I'm on the road, I've been doing shows, and people yell out, "Where's Jack?" Like, this isn't
so
Rotten Tomatoes. This is wrong. This
so
is
dumb. Dumb. Yeah. No. I really no. It's not even close. They don't lie.
Where's
they're
the girl who likes Constantine? No. I want to talk about her.
Don't lie. All they're saying is where's Molly? Like, I know what they're really asking you about.
Yeah.
You're the dog stepfather. Bring her out! No, this is true. And the other aspect of this that is very similar, we haven't mentioned this yet, to Point Break, is Ted Levine is essentially Gary Busey.
Yeah.
That is the same character essence, because he's like, oh, I'll protect you, but, you know, you're coming close. We got to get some results, all this kind of stuff. And of course, just like you've got in the 80s and the 90s, you got to have that black FBI captain who's like, I need results.
Yeah.
Your ass
you
got to
get Delroy in there.
You got to have him
in
there.
I love how many times he threatens, like the exact, because I love when a grizzled FBI, like, starts, like, he has a specific hour. He's like, okay, we need this in 48 hours. Now you got 36 hours. It's like, you got one day to do this. It's like, oh, man, this clock's really ticking on this. Because there's so many elements in this movie. Like, this would be a fine film if Paul Walker didn't have the backstory of him being a cop trying to infiltrate this gang. If he's just trying to break into this racing world. Mm. Like that's pretty much what Tokyo Drift is. It's just, hey, I'm an outsider, and I'm trying to get in this new culture, and I think I got some game. So let's see how I stack up against the best of the best. Mm-hmm. And this movie adds on this action element that I found was fascinating, and that sometimes I'm going to go back and watch this movie for just the interactions and seeing the family and the culture, but other times you do want to see some of those action sequences that, by the way, are really well shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rob Cohen is so smart in this, because remember, Rob Cohen at this time was kind of finding sowing his oats, feeling things out, doing these action films, understanding what the public liked, and so he understood, look, let's start with an action piece to start off the whole thing, like James Bond, and then let's not go too long without another action sequence. I rewatched the film for the show today, and I was just like, wow, there's like 10 minutes of conversation, then action sequence. Mm-hmm. 10 minutes of conversation, chase sequence. 10 minutes of conversation, car chasing. So it's very smart the way he does it. And the street racing stuff, I think this is a genius thing by them to take advantage of it. This culture already existed. They just found a movie. It's like Madonna. There was voguing before Madonna did it, okay? Mm. Madonna just brought it into the mainstream. This is what this film did. It tapped into something that was already happening in LA and a lot of cities and brought it out for people to enjoy. And like you said, guys, feel cool. It's a guy move. Yeah, there are some strong ladies in this movie, absolutely. Michelle Rodriguez, Jordana Brewster. But it's a lot of dudes. So the dudes driving their little Priuses or whatever they were driving back then feel badasses because of this movie. Like Top Gun influenced people to sign up for the Navy, this movie influenced more people to try street racing or get into street racing.
Or just be interested in cars. Or just be interested in cars. Because I would say that was the male approach to it. There was a lot of girls like myself, as Mark knows. Yeah. I'm a muscle car queen. I don't have one anymore because it's stupid gas prices. But he rode in my Challenger back when I had it.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
All you have to do is take cold water a couple times in the morning over from the valley to hear and to realize I don't really want that Mustang anymore.
I really don't.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Also, there's still a muscle car in our house, though. We still have a muscle. Nice. We have the company car as a muscle car. It's the Mustang convertible.
Okay, I was going to wait and tell the story, but I'll tell you all quickly now. So, as Jacqueline knows, I was in the market for a new car forever.
Mm. Oh, yes.
There's a certain electric car that she kept every time she found like a TikTok or a tweet about how this electric car maybe doesn't perform as well as advertised.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She would send it to me as a warning. So
also because I didn't want to support that company, and I was basically like, don't do it, Mark.
Do you even know what kind of car I got?
I did see it. Yeah, okay. You sent me the picture, which I loved because I'm not saying that company, let's be real, they had some stuff going on in World War II, but...
There's a lot of companies,
but at least with
Henry Blank.
Yeah, girl.
Volkswagen. There's other companies also had bad stuff going on.
Let's be real. They just don't have the living embodiment of apartheid living at the top of theirs.
But like, I also test drove a Mustang.
Yeah.
Because I just figured, you know, I'm a man of a certain age. It's time to get a Mustang. Yeah. It's time to get that sports car. Yeah. My dad was a big sports car guy, and I'm like, this is what I'm going to grow into.
Right.
Y'all, I turned the Mustang on at the dealership, and the engine was so loud, I'm like, I don't like it. I want quiet. I don't want to pull into my neighborhood, my nice suburban neighborhood, pull into my driveway and have the neighbors be appalled because I'm out late at night. I'm out telling jokes. I get home at midnight. Here comes Vin Diesel home again. So I got a car that's very quiet. I went quiet. I went luxury over what
it
is.
No, tell what it is. Tell what it is. Because, like,
I'm past my prime when it comes to street racing, is the point. What's really impressive about this movie is how ahead of its time it was. Because going back to the diversity for a minute, this movie was sort of inspired by an article in, I think it was Vibe magazine in 1998. But it was talking about New York City suburbs having street racing. That was primarily white kids doing it.
Right.
And so the fact that a studio took a chance on making this in L.A. and having it, obviously Paul Walker's white, but pretty much the rest of the cast that primarily are people of color. Mm-hmm. So to take that out of the suburban white kids and put that in L.A. and have it shot in L.A. And as people who live in L.A., you can tell it feels like Collateral, where it's like, oh, I know that street, I know that. Mm-hmm. And so 100%. You really do get the Los Angeles vibe of this movie.
Absolutely. And the only thing I would add to that is the main reason for that is the ethnic ambiguity and also charisma of Vin Diesel. Yep. Because for folks who don't know, one of the greatest things I will say about Vin Diesel is a pure movie guy, which I say when you know those people, like Tom Cruise is a movie guy. This is a guy that wakes up every day to watch a movie. Mm-hmm. Quentin Tarantino's a movie guy. These are people that are just obsessed about movie and movie making.
He's a huge nerd.
Vin Diesel was having such trouble as a former model turned actor getting work that he made his own short film about being multiracial and biracial and how he never fit into a box. That movie got in front of Steven Spielberg, who cast him in Saving Private Ryan.
Right.
And that same charisma is what the producers of this saw. And they were like, this guy is the new version of Patrick Swayze. And that sort of, like, so Vin Diesel was the part. And because he was ethnically ambiguous, they're like, we don't want people asking what he is the whole movie. Mm. Just put a whole bunch of everybody around him so that way they're kind of confused.
That's very interesting.
It's very smart.
Literally what they did.
Absolutely. That's how you get
away. Literally what they did.
It wasn't that long ago where studios did not want to have interracial relationships as their leads in film. So having an ambiguous guy like Vin Diesel helps to anchor the film, as you said so well. The white guy's your entry point for the audience you want from that angle. And then you surround him with people who are not overt. Like Jordana Brewster is Panamanian-American.
Yes.
She is a Latina.
But she's also ethnic. She's ambiguous, and that was the reason why they cast her.
It helps it all work, exactly. And then Michelle Rodriguez overtly, very clearly, is this.
But then there's also Asian characters, there's white characters, black characters. Yeah, yeah. And I think just again, and this is the thing that I will say to people that don't maybe get it about African-American and some of how people don't see blackness every place or ethnicity every place that they should or could. You know, I have people all the time thinking, you know, biracial people are, she's just black in this other thing or just black altogether. There's just plain black people that look like they're multiracial. Right. Mm. And that is another aspect. If you look at somebody like Jasmine Guy, she's just black. She doesn't have nobody else mixed with her. She's a black Creole. But that's, you know what I mean? Like, the African-American look is already multinational because of so much race mingling. And so, again, it's It was a moment of necessity that ends up being something incredible, because look at what Singleton does in the next movie. He adds in more darker-skinned black actors, completely changes the dynamic even more.
And one of those actors, unfortunately, was not Ja Rule, who did not return for any of the subsequent movies.
But look, we get Tyrese and Ludacris.
Yeah.
Tyrese and Ludacris, again, watching Fast Five last night, they're just such, every time they show up in these movies, they're such breaths of fresh air because it's so serious and we got to do this thing, and then they're just kind of cracking jokes. What I forgot about the first movie is that Vin Diesel, like his first couple lines, he's kind of funny and he's kind of like just like sarcastic or just like tossing stuff off to the side. He's really good in this movie. And I love, one of my favorite scenes is when we first see Dom from behind. We see this giant back. There was this comic book character from Image Comics in the 90s, and his name was Deathblow.
Yeah.
And he had like the biggest lats I ever saw.
Yeah.
So he looks like Deathblow just hanging out in the back of his restaurant, the family business, and he's lurking like the T-Rex in Jurassic Park, where you're just like, what the hell is that thing? What's it gonna do? And then you see him, and again, I don't know that he could have carried this movie by himself.
Yes.
I liked him as that looming presence, and I don't know that Paul Walker could have carried this movie by himself, but to put them all in there,
and
to have that entire ensemble not just be there, but actually like play like valuable roles in this movie. The women kind of run this movie from the side.
By the way, the first reason why I watched this movie had nothing to do with Paul Walker or with Vin Diesel. It had to do with the fact that I loved Girl Fright, the Girl Fight, which had Michelle Rodriguez, directed by Karen Kusama. And like, I was just like, that's my girl. Cause like, you know, I don't know if you could tell. I wasn't really big into the dresses. Still ain't. Don't let the red carpet fool y'all. But no, like Letty was a huge part of it. And then I also appreciate as we get into the later series, how they had to change that character so she could be multidimensional.
All right.
Because for as much as both her and Jordana kept women in this franchise, which kept the franchise going, let's keep it real.
Yeah.
Fast cannot just run on male aggression and testosterone.
No, the whole thing's about family. It's kind of hard to start a family without women.
Exactly.
True. They're kind of the reason why we do it.
And look later, the female characters we get, Charlize Theron, Helen Mirren, Natalie Emanuel.
Rita Moreno's in the
Rita
new one.
Rita Moreno and Brie Larson. Like, it's just like every time they add these women in here, the dynamics and the flavors continue to change. Because all of the male are just such broad archetypes that, again, it just keeps it grounded. And this movie showed how grounded it could be.
And we have like the tech nerd in this one.
Yeah.
We have like is sort of the sidekicks. The tech nerd, Jesse, Chad Lindbergh. That's who I thought Jordana Brewster should have gone for. Because initially, before she falls in love with Brian O'Connor, or, you know, Earl Spooner at the time, she is kind of hooking up with Vince. And I'm like, there's no way she likes Vince.
No.
And she's, by the way, Vince
I guess, is convinced that they're hooking up. She has not hooked up with Vince.
She's never hooked up with Vince?
Never hooked up with Vince. Never hooked up with Vince?
I do not think Vince has any. Vince is
okay,
like,
good, because he's the guy.
Maybe it was a pity kiss when they were 17. Maybe.
You never be the guy, and I try to tell the youth this. Never be the guy at the party who's playing the guitar. It screams for attention. We saw what happened to the acoustic guitar in Animal House.
Yes.
And now he's at a house party post-race, and he's got his electric guitar plugged in, and he's got some girl hanging on him, and he's hitting some Zach Wilde riff, and it's like, dude, you're trying way too hard.
Yeah.
But I also love that he's a character in this movie, because you always have the person who is tough, but they're not as tough as they think they are.
Yeah. He gets replaced. And you got to have that aspect to add conflict. If Brian replaces
him. They know each other.
Brian does replace him. Yeah. But let's be real. In the grand scheme of things, Vince was right. Vince was like, I do not trust this dude, and that dude was a narc. So, in retrospect, I wanted to point a couple of things out about this movie. Is Vince gets such a bad rap, and somebody needs to recut the Fast and the Furious the way they did when they recut the Karate Kid to make Brian to make LaRussa into
That's
the
a
villain.
Great idea.
Because make Vince the hero.
Let's just be real, he was a narc,
right?
So, like, the fact that this
and Dom didn't see it.
These career criminals did not pick up that the goofy white boy might not be exactly what he says he is kind of hilarious.
You know what? You might have turned me around on Vince.
I'm listening.
Maybe Jordana spent many nights crying on Vince's shoulders about other dudes. And Vince was like, if I could only just get a shot with you, I could treat you really well.
He's the toughest version of the guy that gives you a ride to the airport.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He has
a good judge of character.
Yes.
He literally said,
son of a gun,
this
you've
guy
me around
is
on
not
this guy.
What he thinks he is.
I thought he was a douche, but he's not a douche.
Okay.
And he fights off
I
the
mean,
wire
by the way, he does
arm.
He does like a lot of douchey things, so I'm not trying to say whatever. His tactics are not right.
Yeah, right.
Like, he doesn't have the charisma. Brian has all the charisma and none of the convictions. He has all the convictions and none of the charisma. So again, as somebody that has maybe been accused of the same, I'm not saying I get it, but I understand.
You know, Jesse Love, you got to explain to me, though, because that is a dweeb and a half. I don't know why you think she would go with a guy like
because,
that.
Because he's Chad intelligent. he's got the great smarts.
Jackie, that's an excellent point, actually.
He went to Wake Forest. That's remember who
please,
he
I
is.
I know.
No, he's like...
I know that tattoo, for God's sake.
He's a nice guy you can trust and not cheat on. And I figured Jordana Brewster for better than either a fake street...
And really
turns out to be a cop.
He bet his Jetta. His dad's Jetta, no less. That's nobody
you
that Jordana's
really
going to end up with.
You were really firing shots at Mark. That you guy, don't realize.
Okay.
And it's so
be,
mean.
Who's going to be the multimillionaire? At the end of the day, who's going to be the multimillionaire?
Not him. Johnny Tran shot him.
At this table, absolutely
no,
same.
No, it's not the street racer.
Johnny Tran killed
the
him.
Guy who can...
I mean, let's be
he
real.
He had a short life, and you guys are just pissing on his grave.
Can I just add this one thing to be truth? This whole that guy became his avatar the minute he made eyes at Jordana.
Oh, that's
like
because
let's be real.
Good point.
I know why I was watching the first Fast and Furious, and I think I know why Mark was watching too.
Actually,
you have a type, sir.
I would consider myself more of a Michelle Rodriguez guy. I've been a fan of Michelle Rodriguez forever.
I know you're more of a Michelle Rodriguez fan, but let me be really clear. Yeah. Michelle Rodriguez is the guy that it's the Madeline. It's the you marry Jackie.
You do.
And Jordana is your Jackie.
Mm.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
date Michelle, yeah. you
well,
marry Jordana.
I date Michelle when you're young.
That's
but
sort
you
of how it ended up for good old Brian O'Connor. You know, he ended up married, or I guess I don't know if they ever tied the knot. I guess
they had a baby. That's good enough.
They had a baby.
They had a baby.
And in this world, that counts.
Can I give a little bit of a shout out to Lindbergh? He was just in Picard, season 3 of Picard. He played one of the changelings. So still working that guy.
I will go one step further, and I will give Ja Rule a shout out because he's great in this movie. Ja Rule is fantastic
right.
in this movie.
Brian has a question. Who's the worst actor in the movie? I would have to give it to Ja Rule. So
but Ja Rule is doing exactly what he needed to do, though.
I love you, Ja.
Because he's doing, like, basically, like, you know, he's doing Billy Porter's role from Pose, which, you know.
Oh.
He's, well.
But not in a lot, not a
when
lot of
he's
rappers
racing,
would lose out to the woman.
Yeah,
true.
So
and,
respect
Billy
to
Porter was such more of a mentor in Pose.
Yes. Yeah.
And Ja Rule is sort of like. He's the guy, he's just good enough to hang around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he's sort of that gym rat, and I appreciate that about him. And it also
but he's like the,
gives us some comedic relief
this
in there,
is what
too.
This guy does. This is what this guy, you know, he's like the, he's the hype man.
Yeah, true. Very
yeah,
true.
Yeah, but I mean, he did his role.
Fair.
And there was so I guess the story goes is that John Singleton wanted Ja Rule back for Too Fast, Too Furious.
Okay.
And they made multiple, like, attempts to reach out to Ja Rule's people in Atlanta, and they never got back to him. They blew up John Singleton.
Wow.
And according to Ja Rule, he's like, well, yeah, it's just not the direction he wanted his film career to go in. And he did have some other movies and appearances at that.
He wanted,
but then they you bring in Ludacris, and it's like, oh man, I don't know what it's like to be inside Ja Rule's head, but you got to think, oh, maybe it'd be fun. They could still bring him back though.
They brought
could still bring it back.
They brought
everybody
back
in the last one.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I don't think Ja Rule's cachet that he had at that time.
Just
like
let
he
him
had
drive
cash.
A car in Fast 10.
Maybe
just,
he doesn't. If he does another song with J-Lo, maybe that puts him back in the pop culture zeitgeist.
Have Vin roll up to a streetlight, and whoever is in the cast now, it put Helen Mirren and John Cena in his car, and he just looks at and it's Ja Rule, and they're just like, what's up? And that's all I need.
You know what's so funny? They've gone to so many chases, they've done so many elaborate things. Still to this day, that first race with Brian is one of the greatest to watch. It's like, that's just such a great street race. And just the way they had that dynamic, the way they showed, I don't know, the way they shot it, like just those first push-ins with the dude with the camera, like that was one of those
and
first
that was
times
such,
we really...
like exciting and inventive sort of filmmaking back then. I would hesitate to tell anybody, you need a laptop while you're street racing at 140 miles an hour in your car. That seems a little dangerous to be looking away from the road to hit buttons. But seeing like those nitrous oxide boosts, it does like it does fill you up with a charge watching.
Very much so.
Let me ask you guys, isn't that cheating? Isn't that steroids?
Everybody's
isn't
doing
that
it.
Steroids?
It's the summer of 98 with Maguire and Sosa. If everybody's cheating. If everybody's juicing, then you have to level the playing
field. You are ridiculous.
Everybody,
Derek Jeter didn't take a damn syringe.
They look
so you cut that crap out.
They look under the hood. They look under the hood before the race. Mm-hmm. They see what everybody's got. They know they have nitrous oxide boosts.
I don't think everybody's got NOS, though. That's why I think it's a little bit cheating. But all right.
I mean, but this is a illegal street racing, sir. Like, you were trying to bring in PGA Jack rules so into a street fight.
Jack, you're 100% right.
I'm
you're
like,
right.
What are you doing?
Yes, I'm too straight-laced to street race. That's the truth.
Excuse me, did your club hit the sand before?
It's like, the guy at the pickup game calling a foul. That is such a narc move,
I've
man.
I've got blood on my face. It's a foul.
It's a foul.
Jack, I told you this guy's
sorry,
a cop.
Sorry, that was gendered and rude, but like legitimately. No, legitimately.
What is the scene in this movie that gets John Rocha going?
Oh, what Jackie said. That scene in there is fantastic. But because she already talked about it, I will add the end scene with Vince hanging off the truck and everything like that. That whole sequence is so incredibly well shot by Cohen. And we revisit the car sliding under the truck thing that Letty does, which is so great.
Yeah.
We saw that in the opening of the film. We don't see it again until that car chase scene, and I thought it was fantastic. It was Road Warrior-esque, and then you wrap up the storyline by having Brian save Vince, the one guy he had to convince out of the whole crew. And how does he do it? He reveals himself as a cop by the end. So Vince was right, but Brian still saved him. So there's so much that goes on in that scene that is so great, that works so well, and this is some of the best Vin Diesel acting you'll ever see. When he realizes that Brian is a cop, he doesn't overdo it. He doesn't go too far like some other actors do. He lets it wash over him, and he's conflicted between this guy who's saving his friend from third grade and this guy who he has befriended now being a cop. So there's all of that going on for him, and I appreciate the acting. So I love that scene for that.
Yeah, Vin Diesel kind of has that confidence in this movie. Dom Toretto does, where he can look at somebody and he knows exactly the moral fiber they're made of. He may be a cop, but he also knows who this person is. And I think that's like one of Dom's talents. The scene that I appreciate in this movie, for the most part, is when we have that quiet moment and it's part real, like, emotional, just bro talk, and it gets a little Kevin Bacon in the barn dancing in Footloose territory, is when Dom takes Brian in to see his car, and he gives the backstory of his dad, and he has these lines that are just tough to get. Like, when he actually looks another man in the eye and says, "I live my life a quarter mile at a time," that's hard to get out and make it convincing.
Yeah, but he does. It's in the trailer, and it kills,
I'm
dude.
Gonna say, name an actor who could pull that off better than Vin Diesel. You'd be hard-pressed.
No, you're right.
And it has to have that gravel. It's got to have that, like, I live my life. Like, it's got to feel the weight of that moment. Like, a quarter mile is a big weight. I'm like, Usain Bolt does that in, like, a minute, dude. Like, you're fine. Like, you're going to be all right. But the thing also I want to appreciate with this one, rewatching it, is we had like a bona fide sex scene and a sexy sex scene in the middle of this action movie. And honestly, like, I am sorry if movies do, if I have to start just making a bunch of really, really, really like Adrian Lin sex movies to bring the sex back to cinema.
Mama
because
loves her romantic novels.
We have no sex in movies anymore. And we wonder why like a third of men under 25 have never known a woman.
What was the last great sex scene that we saw in a movie?
Eternals, and that's sad. I'm joking.
I don't know.
Joking. No, that's not. The last really good one that
I
saw.
The Notebook had a good one, but they never clean up afterwards and always bothered me. They finish. There's clearly no prophylactic usage. And they're in this like kind of house that he's still building. And then they just cuddle the rest of the night. And I'm like, dude, you got to go pee right now.
He did not put that on her.
Prophylactic, he said.
They didn't. There was no contraception.
Yeah, kids, in the old days, we used to call them prophylactics. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Use lambskin. Use latex. I remember being taught that in sex ed and being like, what? Who has a lambskin?
Yeah,
lambskin.
Oh,
that's
my
weird.
God.
Where's
you guys,
that? Yeah.
I would say for shows, though, if you guys aren't watching Obsession on Netflix, there is some great sex scenes in that.
It's on TV.
Yeah, it's on TV. It's
but
a version
even
of
in
damage.
Movies. But in movies.
There's something about being in a dark theater and shoving popcorn in your face, watching people copulate.
I don't care. Give yourself over to the moment. If they're doing all that dangerous things with cars, you think they're not banging? Can we get a little you know what I mean? This is a very sexy cast.
Well, that's what I was going to say is that there actually are a bunch of sex scenes in Fast and Furious movies. They just go vroom vroom. Like that is a sex scene. Making love to your car is a real thing.
That's
they do it constantly in these movies.
Fair.
And now we got a new one coming out. May 19th, Fast 10. Are we excited still? Because they're so preposterous, but they're also fun to watch with these ridiculous action sequences. I know that we're done after the next movie,
Fast 11, I think,
but are we really done? Do we want to be done?
No. No, because it can be rebooted, it can be reimagined, because it's about the franchise, it's about these characters, it's about this idea of coming together for something, I don't think that you can replace it. Like, this dynamic works, but get a good casting director on it. You can find another dynamic that works.
You think so?
I do.
Reboot the whole thing.
Because, again, it was a reboot to begin with. Like, they did this with Point Break. And honestly, if they could have kept making Point Breaks that with that level of cast, they would have.
There was a film called The Fast and the Furious that came out in 1954.
Yes.
And I think Roger Corman helped with a story on it. It was a different kind of, it was this guy, and I think he, like, stole a truck and was trying to get down to Mexico, falls in love along the way. They both end up, like crossing the border, okay. But John Rocha.
That was Vin's dad, I think.
How far down the road can we see these movies going?
Oh, I think Jackie's 100% right. You don't even have to skip a beat. They're already laying the groundwork for his son to become a street racer already.
Yeah.
In fact, you see him being highlighted in the new trailer with, hey, I'm handing you my son, my brother, John Cena. Take my son and take care of him while I'm going to this. His son is going to figure this out, be a part of this, and they're going to absolutely, like
you said,
and
that was the reason they don't bring in John Cena in just to come do one movie. John Cena is about to start another thing because it's just about populating, and they may be on TV, it may be someplace else. You know, it doesn't really particularly matter where they go.
Yeah, and I listen, when Fast 9 came out, that was when we were still knee-deep in the COVID stuff, and they did a premiere for it or a screening for it in L.A. I drove up from San Diego to L.A. to see Fast 9 at the TLT theater there because I worship this franchise.
What was your top speed?
Well, in San Diego, you can go 90 comfortably on the highway, which is insane. Something I had to get used to when I moved
there. Well, Texas is like that, so I've been like that.
It's scary.
It's like that drive to Vegas where you're like, oh my God, I'm doing 100. Jeez.
The drive from Coachella to Los Angeles, it's like in Texas, you're on the Autobahn and then you get to New Mexico and you're like, what is wrong with y'all? Let's go.
Yeah. Why is my car shaking? Is it supposed to go this fast? But so I think this thing endures. I think it'll keep going. Fast 10 is going to be fantastic. I think Momoa is a great injection.
Yeah.
He's essentially
the Rock
energy
without the Rock.
Yeah.
Brie Larson coming in is going to be great as well for them. And they're bringing Jason Statham in. So you're not going to get Hobbs, but you got Shaw. Yeah. So it's going to work.
I do love what this franchise does where it introduces, for a movie or two, like you're just the worst ultimate bad guy. And then, you know what? Okay, I kind of like you.
Yeah.
There's like a begrudging respect. It's almost like the NBA where player mobility is such a thing now where it's like I can be such bitter rivals with John Rocha because of I'm wearing a Lakers uniform and he's wearing a Warriors uniform, but then two seasons later, lo and behold, now I got to be friends with you because we're on the same team and we got to find a way to make this work. And so it does remind me of like the landscape of modern sports.
We should break the news now. Dylan Brooks has signed with the Lakers for the playoffs. So yeah, you're absolutely right though. It's true.
I don't know. I don't even follow basketball like that anymore, but I know that dude's a bitch. Like I do. TikTok has told me. So I want to tell you. So a friend of mine actually just got a job at the NHL.
Nice.
And I've been letting them know about something that Mark knows about, but I'm going to let you know about, which is that I'm a very big romance novel reader. And one of the areas is sports athletes as the like
particularly hockey players.
Wow.
And let me tell you.
I get a lot of late night texts about what she's reading.
Wait a minute. Time out though.
Yeah.
I've been telling Mark about this for pretty much our entire friendship. So 6 years. The internet is finally catching up to where now the Seattle Kraken's an actual NHL team. If you look at their TikTok, it's just made for girls like me. It's just thirst traps.
NHL finally got on board with like what the NBA's done, and then the NFL like got on board a couple seasons later. Is like, hey, look at how sexy these dudes look walking into the arena. Yeah.
God bless those social media managers.
I became a Seattle Kraken fan last year because my girlfriend's boyfriend. His son lives in Seattle, and they were going to the games.
I have family in Seattle. Yeah. I love the logo.
So it's a great logo.
I wore the tank top to work today.
Yeah.
All I have to say is I have been on this camp for years, and this man is my witness because I was indoctrinating him into it long before he ever wanted to know. He's like, why are you telling me about this?
My friend is a big romance writer, Caitlin Cruz. So if you find her stuff, enjoy it. Yeah, I'll tell her. Like, put NHL people in there.
Well, they're having a big moment. Either way, the sports romance, and I am currently writing one about the baseball dude because I am obsessed with him. Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, Shohei Ohtani. Yeah.
Oh, Ohtani. Yeah. Right.
He is the thing that romance novels were built off of.
I don't know how it translates into the bedroom if you're a great hitter and a great pitcher, but see in Jacqueline's new novel.
If you can make
listen,
I did not think we were going to end the Fast and the Furious conversation with talk of sports romance, but
that's why this podcast is great.
While you listen to us here at Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong, subscribe, like, rate, review, all that good stuff. And now for our big outro, Brian, hit the music. All right. It's been so great having you back
in the studio, my man. I love you guys, and it's been great to be guys, so thank you for having me.
Last time we had you was The Greatest Showman, I want to say?
I think it was Greatest Showman.
Something like that. Maybe that's why you weren't on the show. Maybe we put you on a year restriction for singing Jackie, too many show tunes.
Yeah, Jackie did not like that movie. No, it's
I still don't, but I will say I've seen worse musicals since.
Oh, yeah.
Cats happened.
Oh, my God. Woof. Tom Stoppard is still working on it. He's still trying to fix it.
I want Jacqueline to be like the next great like Broadway theater critic. And anytime she sees a bad play, all she has to say is, well, it wasn't as bad as the Cats movie.
Yeah, Cats happen, man. Cats happen. Like I watched that in London. Speaking of which, I will say this. I will be seeing Fast X in Rome.
Nice.
Right.
Damn.
That's exciting. So you get to like interview the cast and stuff?
Yeah, it's kind of nice. I think this will be out before then, but the folks at Universal were very kind to ask me to moderate the press conference.
That's
so awesome. I will be talking to the entire family.
Woo! Okay, what's a hot take? You're not really a hot take kind of question, which I appreciate about you. You're not trying to get people. You're not trying to go for a social media moment. But like, what is an actual thing on your mind about the franchise?
I definitely want to talk to like the longer term people about like the craziest moments for them, like sort of getting to this. Because we're starting to get to the end of like, hey, look, man, this is coming to the end of it. And you're really looking at this as like a pantheon moment. Like break down some of your stuff. Like, let's make this a bit of a retrospective on this incredible franchise. Forget anything you've done. This is like a franchise that is going to be a high watermark for what movies can do. So like, this is amazing.
How many franchises have 10 installments that are still relevant
and run
by
a quarter century later?
You know, 6 billion deep, like 10 installments, 6 billion deep.
You can have that. You can go, okay, it started a quarter mile at a time. Now it's a quarter century. You can have that.
Oh my God.
That's for free. Put that in Rome Pepperdine. You're going to make Vin Diesel smile.
I'm going to do that. Yeah.
It's going to work. It's going to work well. All right. So usually, John, I'm going to do this two ways. We usually ask for like a streaming recommendation, a movie that you like. I'm going to get that from you. But before I get that, what is the best Fast and Furious movie to you?
It's got to be Fast 5. You can't deny Fast 5. It is, it's just the apex of everything they've done and the whole Brazil thing. And the fact that that is going to echo into Fast 10 now speaks volumes about how good that movie
was.
Yeah.
Rio just looks fun.
Yep, it does.
Michael Caine movie, Blame It on Rio, Jacqueline. There's some sex scenes in there for you.
There is some Blame It on Rio.
I think a young Demi Moore in that movie.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a little problematic, but sure.
I've never actually seen the movie.
I'm just aware of it.
It's his best friend's daughter, so.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Slightly underage-ish.
Hey, you know what? We live and we learn. I never saw the movie. I remember seeing it. I remember seeing it on Preview Guide when I was a kid. And thinking, this movie comes on like 2 hours. It was like 3 a.m. I'm like, I'll stay up and see if I see any boobs. And I passed out. I fell asleep. Too many Pop-Tarts.
You want to recommend Lolita next? Because that's kind of what you do.
Join us next week for you host.
What is your favorite Fast movie?
My favorite Fast.
Because I agree with John. I think Fast 5 is the apex. When I was doing On the Street, our show here at Rotten Tomatoes that I'm doing now, which is a lot of fun, interviewing a bunch of folks at CinemaCon in Las Vegas, and just asking them, what's your favorite Fast and Furious movie? Some of them said Fast 5. A lot of them said the original. But a lot of them also said Fast 7 because of the emotional goodbye to Paul Walker.
Five and one, I was less emotionally attached to Paul Walker, and so I would put that as 3. But 1, 5, 7.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's good.
All right.
I go now, 5, 1, 7.
So what is something that is non Fast and Furious related that John Rocha can recommend all the gang out there?
Well, you know, I just finished Beef, and I absolutely loved it.
Speaking of raging on the road,
I was hesitating on that because of all the stuff that had come out, but I was like, you know what? I love Ali Wong. I love Steven Yeun. Well, I want to support.
I mean, that's the worst part about it. The show's amazing. Yeah, the worst part about the stupidity of the choice. Why do you want to talk about this when you could just talk about how great this show is?
Yeah.
And I've known Ali for a long time. She's a fantastic comedian.
This is the best acting she's done.
I mean, you should ask her about that.
I'm going to ask her if she's seen Blame It on Rio. I'm going to say, hey, what's your favorite Michael Caine movie? That's probably where I'll leave it.
No, actually, it'd be better for you to ask, like, what's she doing with my husband?
Who? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
Jacqueline has a lot of loves in her life.
Oh, wow.
No, just one. I really think Bill Hader's great, but not like that. And honestly, that is probably the best romantic decision he's made post-divorce, I'm happy for him.
Can I add something to what Jackie just said? That's the other great thing that's going on right now. This is the best season of Barry, and it's not even over yet.
Yeah.
It is
It's been
incredible.
And he directed the whole thing. Yep. It's going to go out
Anyone complaining that it's not funny enough doesn't understand the masterpiece that he's building here in this season of Barry.
That's incredible. Right. Well, I don't know maybe the critics will come out and say my new stand-up hour is a masterpiece, but you can check it out soon enough. Wow. Go to Mark Ellis Live on all the social medias for updates on when you can be the first to watch it. For Jacqueline Coley, I'm Mark Ellis, and John Rocha, thank you so much for joining
us.
Where can all
much.
The folks out there find you?
You can always find me at The Rocha Says on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, The Outlaw Nation on Twitch, and my YouTube channel, youtube.com/JohnRocha Says, where we have the Geek Buddies and the Hot Mic with me and Jeff Snyder currently setting studios on fire.
You have just done the impossible because you took it, you had a great brand already, and you've cultivated a YouTube following out of it, and now you're big on Twitch and all the social media, and so it's been I'm sure it's been a grind for you.
It is.
But it's kind of like what Jacqueline's going to ask Vin Diesel about. You look back and you're like, I built this cool little empire.
Yeah, when you love what you do, it's easy to build.
There you go.
And I think Vin does too with Fast and Furious. Yeah.
All right. Before we get out of here, who's winning the NBA Finals?
I hate to say this.
The answer is the Nuggets.
The Lakers.
The answer is the Nuggets.
No, it isn't.
Email us at RT is wrong anytime. RT is wrong at RottenTomatoes.com. Subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. For the whole gang here, I'm Mark Ellis. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time on Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong.